Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
After the fall of Lehman Brothers, Joe Pita needed a new employer. He found a new job in New York City, but he lost that too when an ambulance mowed him down as he crossed the street on foot. In search of a way to cheer himself up while he recuperated in a wheelchair, he started watching baseball again as he had growing up. That's when inspiration hit. Why not apply his outstanding risk analysis skills to improve on sabermetrics, the method made famous by Moneyball, and beat the only market in town, the Vegas betting line? Why not treat the MLB like the S&P 500? In his book, Trading Bases, Pita shows how to subtract luck from a team's statistics to best predict how it will perform in the next game and over the entire season. His baseball hedge fund, if you will, returned an astounding 41% in 2011 with daily volatility similar to funds he used to trade for. Joe Pita joins us to talk about Trading Bases, a story about Wall Street gambling and baseball, not necessarily in that order. Joe, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks for having me.
And it is Pita. Am I right on that?
Yes, it is. Yep.
Excellent. Let us talk about how I set it up a little bit, but how was this ever in the back of your mind, even when you were working on Wall Street, that this was something that was comparable in some way?
Not really. I'll tell you, Joe, when it really hit me. When I started watching those games and I started looking at the baseball season through a sabermetric lens, which we now know has gotten some mainstream recognition from like the movie Moneyball. When I started sort of examining baseball from that perspective, I remember I looked up at my bookshelves and I saw three types of books dominating the shelves. I saw books on baseball, I saw books on Wall Street, and I saw books on Las Vegas, primarily poker books. And I realized all three of those really have one thing in common. They celebrate critical reasoning. And that's when I started thinking, hey, this sabermetric, this isn't much different than the logic we use to value companies when we're trading them. And then when we value companies and we think they're over or undervalued, well, I know what I do on a daily basis if I find that. Let's see if I can then apply that to betting on baseball games. And that's really how it all came about.
So how did you come to create this market investment model for the 2011 Major League Baseball season? How long does it take to do something like that?
You really do have to dive into the numbers. Now, the nice thing is you don't have to reinvent anything. There are, because of the wealth of data and work that has been done by pioneers in this field like Bill James and like Nate Silver, who has now moved on to analyzing political elections. Because of the work they've done, it's possible to go in there and really kind of build your own models. And I try to lay out for the reader, hey, if you want to be a do-it-yourselfer, here's the template I used, and I'll give it to you. And here's the logic I used in trying to apply some of these sabermetric principles to determine what I thought was going to happen for the 2011 season. And once I did that, then I show people how I convert that into predictions on daily games. And that really is how the ball got rolling.
So just so everyone's on the same page, briefly describe sabermetrics and that philosophy.
Sure. Sabermetrics is really the study of baseball statistics. And I think it has application, and I really talk about this in the book. It has application, though, beyond baseball. It really is analyzing data and trying to glean information from the data that hopefully, especially in the case if you are trying to find something that is undervalued, hopefully something that is non-obvious. And in baseball, the way that's most effective is to look for data that identifies skill sets as opposed to looking at results. And that's really what I was doing, was trying to find, okay, I know that a team may have won 81 games last year or that they scored 800 runs, but based on the skills of their players, how many should they have won? How many runs should have they scored? And I found that to be a better predictor of what was going to happen in the future.
Why is baseball so ripe for this as opposed to basketball or horse racing or football or any number of other sports?
I can't speak to horse racing, but I can speak to basketball and football. And really, I think this is what makes baseball unique. Baseball, one, it has a very rich data set because, you know, going back to when our parents watched baseball, there were box scores in the paper, and so a lot of data has been recorded. But the real reason you can predict the future better with baseball data is that baseball, at its heart, is really a single game of baseball is really 60 or 70 one-on-one confrontations between a pitcher and a batter. And it's only the skills of those two players that you really need to be able to model. For instance, we all know Justin Verlander is great, and I can tell you that it doesn't matter who he plays for, what stadium he's in, what pitcher he's throwing to, even what team he's playing against, he will strike out 30% of his batters. Now, I can't say that about Tom Brady. Tom Brady is a great, great quarterback, but if I put him on the Kansas City Chiefs next year, he will not have the same statistics because he'll be throwing to a different receiver with a different offensive line, with a different head coach and a different scheme. So there's so much interdependence in basketball, in football, that makes it much harder to model.
You made your season projections and then converted them to single game win expectancies. So you are in for a single game, but you're also looking at this as a season as a whole. If you have a bad game, then you look on to the next game.
Of course, and that's when I really started applying some of the principles we use on Wall Street and in hedge funds and at mutual funds in how we manage risk, allocate capital, and that's exactly right. I looked at the baseball season. The baseball season is 2,400 games long, so it's very important if you have a model that has an edge, baseball is a great test for it because what you would want to do the same thing that you would want to do in Wall Street, which is if you have a small edge, place a reasonable, generally small amount of money invested in that edge, and then try to repeat it many, many times. And that way, when you run into the inevitable cold streaks, there's no fear that you're going to bankrupt yourself. And what I try to do in the book is apply that logic and show what went wrong at Lehman Brothers, because I happen to have a front row seat there for 13 years. And I try to point out that, you know, the mistakes that were made at Lehman Brothers, you can't make those when you're investing.
Well, I mean, and that's what's so fascinating about the story is it, on the face of it, we can look at it and say, look, here's a guy taking taking your savings, going to Vegas, and really trying to hit the dartboard. But what you come away with in reading the book is really this is no different than what they're doing on Wall Street.
Yeah, Joe, I appreciate that. What I tried to show was, look, of course, any book that has a Vegas element to it, you know, hey, that can be exciting, right? You know,
well,
a certain amount of people that are drawn to that story.
And seedy.
Yeah, and seedy, absolutely. Absolutely, there is some of that, too, because you're like, is this gambling? What, you know, is he...
Well, it is gambling.
What I really tried to show was how similar the critical reasoning is between successful investors, between these rocket scientists that developed sabermetrics, which has helped baseball teams manage their business better, and yes, between those that would be inclined to bet on games. And I really try to show that there's a lot of similarities there, and I try to tie it all back to baseball, and that really at the heart of this, I wouldn't have done any of this if I hadn't sort of rediscovered my love that I had as a teenager for baseball.
When you talk about your return being 41%, That is good when you compare it to similar funds.
Sure.
But if you put it into a baseball perspective of saying, okay, I'm coming in and I'm winning 41%, obviously you're looking at the entire league, you know, you're looking at the entire picture. But if you're an individual team and you're coming up with 41%, that's not good. So
no, definitely not. That's right. That is purely expressed, that 41% return is purely a comparison to, say, a typical investment. That is a return on capital. And to be fair, in 2012, which is what I cover in the epilogue, the return was just 14%. So not as great a story in 2012, but you know, I'd like to think that over 2 years it showed that some edge did exist. But yeah, what I'm trying to show the reader is, hey, if you actually are going to bet on things, don't go in there saying I'm trying to make $100 or $1,000. What you should be doing is thinking of it as a return on capital. If I've got $1,000 base, if I can make $140 on that, that's a 14% return, and that's a quality investment.
Is there something that through this have you learned something about Wall Street in the sense of you've taken your knowledge of what you learned on Wall Street and brought it to baseball? Through this process, have you learned anything that would help you in working in the market?
Absolutely, Joe. I think here's what my real takeaway from this is, and I spend a whole chapter talking in the book about it, is that despite the fact that the industry of Major League Baseball is worth something around $30 billion, or about $1 billion of franchise. And of course, there's big fluctuations in there, but on average, the industry is worth about $30 billion. There are a number of individual banks, from Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, et cetera, that are worth more than the entire industry of Major League Baseball. And yet, I find that baseball does a better job using its data to evaluate its employees. And by that I mean the Kansas City Royals have a really good idea of what their middle reliever is worth to them. You know, how much wins he generates, they know how much a win is worth in terms of revenue, and therefore they can price the value of the employee. And it's because they focus on his skill sets. I find that the financial industry still just simply looks at the end of the year at who has the highest P&L or which portfolio manager had the best return, and they give him 5 stars. And yet, that's not indicative of what's going to happen in the future. And I think Wall Street would be much better off thinking like the baseball. It's ironic to me that Wall Street is behind baseball in using their own data.
So what do you do for a living?
Right now, I wrote. You know, the last 2 years, I could have never sort of envisioned that this was going to happen, and this is sort of the culmination of 2 years' work.
Okay. Well, the name of the book is Trading Bases, a story about Wall Street, gambling, and baseball, not necessarily in that order. It is published by Dutton. Joe Pita, great pleasure to have you on the program. Best of luck to you, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
A delight. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Trading Bases. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.